Welcome to the Secrets in the City podcast, where we turn secrets of our past into lifelong lessons. My name is Catherine Isco, and I'm the proud host of this podcast series. So, my next guest, Mason Roberts. This guy is an artist, a former international model for the likes of Dolce & Gabbana and Armani, hell yes, and as you'll soon find out, a constant source of radioactive energy and confidence. But like everyone I meet, there's always more than meets the eye. In this podcast, Mason opens up about being bullied as a child for being different.
When I was younger, because I've got such an ADD personality, yeah, people would always call me ADD Mace. So ADD Mace, I would freak out and people would like shout at me, ADD Mace, and I'm like, well, fuck, like, and then I would cry, and I remember that.
And also his experience of living with anxiety due to a constant fear of death.
I had a very anxious mindset, and my anxiety got to the point where it was like, holy shit, like, I'm scared of death. Like, I was like, death is like nothingness forever. And I was like, holy shit, like, it would freak me out so much.
We'll talk about the pressures high achievers put on themselves.
I just really want to do something awesome before I hit 30 as like a check mark.
And debate the pros and cons of living in the present moment.
Am I going to regret this if I don't do it? Yes. So if that's the case, I'm going to do it, because that makes no sense if I want to like live my life to the fullest.
But most importantly, and this is where I know you'll want to listen in, you're going to be inspired to push through mental discomfort.
Sit in that scary thought for a while and just be there. You don't have to do much. You don't have to do anything. If you do anything, that's too much. Just sit in the pain and those like scary thoughts and just see what happens. And like your mind starts to figure it out itself. Because like I said, we're smarter than we think.
How to intentionally put yourself in uncomfortable situations.
Yeah, if you want to grow as a person, definitely have to go through and force yourself to be in situations that you don't want to be in.
And why sometimes it's just not possible to push aside your pain, and that's okay.
It's okay to have scars. It's beautiful to have scars because that makes you you. There's no light without the dark. You need to have the darkness to be able to even see the light.
So for anyone struggling to get out of their own head, stick to the end, where we're going to deep dive on how to switch on the hidden potential of the mind. Just one last thing before we get started. A quick note to say that, well, Mason gets a bit passionate and there's going to be a few F-bombs. So if there are any little humans running around, best to listen in using your earphones. Enjoy. So what's the secret that you chose today?
My secret is I'm scared I won't achieve everything I want by 30, even though I'm 31.
It's that roundabout time. So why did that one sort of hit home for you?
I felt like there was like crazy pressure when I was younger, like before I turned 30. Not crazy pressure from anyone. I guess it's just
myself,
but it probably is from someone, right? Like, or something, or societal pressure, I don't know, to do something cool before you're 30. But I was like, fuck, I just really want to do something awesome before I hit 30 as like a check mark. And I think it's a real Australian thing, or maybe like it's just like in our culture to do something awesome or something, at least have a house.
Yeah.
By the time you're 30, I'm like, I'm an artist. I can't afford a house, so I'll do something cool or something. I don't know.
Do you think it's kind of like a rite of passage?
Yeah.
To say, I have done X, therefore I can go to the next period of my life?
It was just ingrained in my mind to do something. I guess because when you're an artist, you go down the path of trying to, like, stability is not a thing.
So do you think stability is, as an artist, do you think stability is something that breaks creativity?
Yes and no. Like, I strive for stability, but I hate it at the same time. Because right. I think that if you're stable, then it's kind of like, it can kind of ruin things, because that means you've turned your art practice into a business. And then when it's a business, then you're just after money and you're not after creativity. And then it's like finding like the balance between both. Does that make sense?
Right. So you have to starve and be on the edge of poverty to be a real artist.
Yeah. I always said, if I make like a shitload of money, I'm just going to like give it all away so I can be broke again. Like, that's been my life, just being like up and down, like I'll make X amount of dollars and then I'll put it right back into the art business or whatever I'm doing at the time and then try to get back to the, like, it, there's this weird adrenaline rush when you're on the edge of like, oh, am I going to be able to make it? Can I do anything? So, yeah.
A lot of people thrive that way. You know, there's two different kinds of procrastinators. Those that actually thrive off the adrenaline rush to keep them focused and others that don't. So it sounds to me that you're more of the former. But getting back to succeeding in something, do you think you have succeeded at something?
Yeah, so that question, the secret that I like selected, it kind of resonated. It was the only one that really resonated with me, like out of it, because like I said, it was just like ingrained in me to do something. And what I chose to do was randomly, I had this like epiphany. I said, as an artist, what is like the art capitals kind of like the main places to do art is like New York, Paris. It kind of follows the fashion trend. So it's like New York, Paris, Milan, wherever fashion goes, that's where art goes as well. And I happened to wanted to go to New York. So that was like my main goal. I was just like, New York is what I want to do. This is going to be the pinnacle of everything. Da, 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 da. I tried like, my past is in modeling, so in fashion. So I started there and New York was the only place I couldn't get signed. So I had some business to like achieve there. And I was like, well, fuck this. If I can't get signed, I'm definitely going to do something cool in New York. So I chose to have an art exhibition there. And weirdly enough, art was something that I picked up as I was modeling. So it all kind of tied in and I was just like, yeah, fuck this. If I can't get signed to do like modeling in New York and no agency will want me, like I'll just do my own thing and stake my claim here. Like I always said, I'm going to do something cool in New York. And I thought it would have been through modeling, but you know how life is crazy and it kind of ebbs and flows and you go in any direction. And then like that was my thing. And I just said to myself, like, I'm going to have an exhibition in New York. Called up my mate, who's also a creative at the time. He was into music. Sterling Caiolo is his name. And I said, dude, I want to have an exhibition in New York. I want you involved. Call me back if you are 110%, 100 billion percent in. I don't want any maybes or anything. You have to like just say yes or no. And yes means you are committed and we're doing this. Then like a day or two later, he just messaged me back, yes, and it was on. I didn't even have the funds ready. I just like figure it out how I'm going to work this out. And I just did it.
It sounds to me that no matter what life throws at you, you make lemonade in that sense. Because the modeling industry, I mean, I'm 5 foot. I don't think I'll ever be a part of that by any means. But I mean, I have quite a few friends that have been in it and so forth. It sounds like a very cutthroat industry. And it can be, I guess, very demeaning in a way because essentially you are what you are on the outside and people either like you or don't or like your looks or not. So can you tell us a bit about how you went from basically being rejected by the modeling industry in New York to saying, I want to prove myself in the art industry?
Yeah, I went over a couple times and tried to get signed and like it just, I went to every agency and like was almost signed here, there. But inherently the fashion industry, like you got to deal with rejection. That's like the number one thing because it's kind of like a lottery. If your look, it's not everyone is like, it's not, it doesn't mean you're like ugly or whatever if you didn't get the campaign. It just means that your look wasn't necessarily the thing they were looking for at the time of this campaign. And so you got to realize for them, it's all business. For us, it's like can get, you get, it gets to your ego.
Yeah.
And it's like you just got to kind of put your ego aside and be like, nah, it's not me. So maybe New York was never meant for me for like modeling stuff. And I don't really care. I was just doing it as an experience and something I could tell my grandkids when I'm like old. I'm like, I was cool back in the day, I swear. So
it sounds to me that you went in there with like curious to see what would happen rather than having all your eggs in one basket and saying, I must get this. If I don't get this, then I'm a failure.
Nah, you
sound like you're almost like a little kid. Like, I can't wait to try this out. And if it doesn't work out, woohoo, I'll do something else.
Yeah, weirdly enough, I like and dislike pain in a sense where it's like not to the level where it's like, you know, something awful happens to me. But just being on the edge of pain is, and we talked about that before, is like really good for art. Yeah. But for me, it's really good to have like, some kind of turmoil in my life. I don't go looking for it, but I try to like at least change the negative into some kind of positive. And I just had recently my old booker say to me at Vivian's, Christine Fox, the nicest thing I've ever said. I hope she doesn't mind me saying this, but she said to me, she said, like, what we love about you is, like, when you go into a room that you, like, lighten up the room and everything is, like, positive and happy. And I don't know what happened to me when I was a child. I probably dropped on the head and then, like, that's why, like, I have this childlike mentality, but it's kind of, like, that is my thing. I just always, turn the lemons into lemonade.
Yeah.
And I don't know why I'm wired that way.
You could just be genetically born that way. There are some data to show that there are genetic predispositions to confidence and social connection and so forth. So maybe when you got dropped on your head, it just sort of, there's
well, some, now that's a thing.
epigenetics into play and sort of like morphed your genes.
Weirdly enough, if we go right back to when I was younger, like I was so... It's kind of, maybe I'm always trying to prove something to myself. So when I was younger, I would, we were in the street and there was like a Channel 9 crew filming something. I would avoid cameras at all costs. I would hate, because I was like the most cautious child. Like I was counting stairs before I would walk up them. Like the most cautious person. And what I try to do now is take all of my flaws and literally flip it on its head and see what the other side looks like. And if I can master the other side, then I've grown.
How did this... Okay, you got to walk me through this because that's wild. Mm-hmm. Like, because I always say that you can change your brain. You can change into whoever you want to become.
Yeah.
But it sounds to me like... how old were you when you were this sort of cautious...
I don't think it was actually that young. Oh, when I was cautious, like my whole life, I'm still cautious. Like I count the steps coming up here, but like it's... You never lose your genetic predisposition, let's say, but you learn to be able to tailor it towards whatever goals you're after or whatever person you want to become. So you never really lose kind of these insecurities and all that. You just learn how to kind of deal with them better.
So when you were a kid in that Channel 9 incident and you were saying, I don't want to be in front of cameras, at that time, were you saying to yourself, no, I need to trump this and go in front of the camera?
No. Like, tail between the legs, run away.
Walk me through the process. How did you change from that person to the person that you are today?
Maybe I'll start from the moment, which I can recall, which is it was modeling, right? So I got signed and there was a weird... thing that I had, like they get you to do weird stuff in modeling. So one of my first test shoots.
Zoolander?
Yeah. Blue Steel? Yeah. It is 100% like Zoolander, by the way. Like 10 guys in a house in Milan. Yep, that happens. Like definitely. Maybe not the petrol fight, but yeah. So for the test shoot, so a test shoot is essentially a free shoot that you will pay for as the model to get some pictures that you can essentially lure in clients to do. And this is when you're brand new. So once every year or two, you'll do it just to refresh your book. And obviously you change as time goes on. So I got one of my mates at the time, like Justin Griffiths, who does the video for Vivian's. He used to work for Vivian's and he shot me in Forest Chase. And he says, would you get in your underwear and walk through the fountains there that are in the middle of like the square? And I was like, shit, like in my head, that as a child, hell no. Like even going to swimming carnivals in like budgie smugglers. I was like, no, I hate that. I was so reserved and so scared of that. But I kind of came up with this thing and it's very cliche, but it's like life is ephemeral and we all die. And it like life, the only constant in life is change. And like, what can you do? You can only be in the present moment. So I was just like, well, fuck it. If I'm going to like... Am I going to regret this if I don't do it? Yes. So if that's the case, I'm going to do it because that makes no sense. If I want to like live my life to the fullest, I'm not going to just like say, no, I don't want to do that. And like, I'll regret it. And the whole day will be shit.
So it sounds to me that you are so in the present moment that sometimes you don't, you have almost no fear because you don't even consider what's going to happen in the future.
I think I can fix that. It's like fighting to be in the present moment.
Yeah.
Constantly. That's never, no one is ever present constantly. So you're like a Buddhist monk. I feel like, and you practice that as your life. You're always fighting to be in the present moment. And the beauty about, like, I did meditation to get over anxiety when I was younger, and it's probably all tied in. But the thing is with meditation and becoming present is like every time your mind drifts away, that's actually a great thing. Because when you realize it's drifted and you bring it back, that's like a bicep curl for your brain. And every time that you bring it back and you bring it back and you bring it back,
you're reaffirming.
You'll probably know this better than me, but it's like you're reaffirming that state of mind and present becomes more of a constant.
You were saying, I want to do X and Y by 30.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds to me that you've done the show in New York. You've done tremendous things. Yeah. But then you also said you sort of fly by the seat of your pants kind of thing. Like you just sort of go with the flow and see what happens, turn lemons into lemonade and so forth. And it sounds to me that this was a conscious decision at that moment of the, let's call it the naked fountain, for lack of a better word.
I love that. Damn, I need to paint that.
And that was almost like a test for you. Let's see what happens. Let's see if I make this decision, this almost opposite choice to what I'm thinking. Let's see what happens.
It's always like a conscious decision and it always stems from there's a pain point, right? Where you're like, okay, I'm in pain. And either you have it in you or you don't, or you have to like learn to have it in you is like, yeah, we need to turn this into a positive because like growth is essential. If you're stagnant in life, you're going to be, if you don't change anything, you're just going to be stagnant for the rest of your life. You need to make some kind of change if you want to like move forward and progress. Like I said, there was like lots of little moments that led up to that one moment. That's like my memory of it being the defining point of me changing myself. Like my first, you know, long-term-ish relationship ended and I was in Sydney. I could have chosen to go home back to Perth with the tail between the legs, or I stick it out with no money in Sydney and try to make it work and see what the end result is. And usually when you go through the pain, there's going to be really shit things that happen and really good things. And if you jump on the good things, your curve is more likely to be exponentially positive over the course of your life as opposed to like negative. You got to choose to jump on the positive. So when I was in Sydney that time and I was really shaken and I was like literally a notebook moment sitting on the curb, rain falling down, crying, battery died, called everyone on my phone. I was like, I have nothing. Got kicked out of my apartment. I was like, shit, man, what the fuck? Go on Gumtree. I say, hey, I got no money, but can I stay at this place? And she's like, yeah, but we do like an interview. I go there. They loved me as a person. Great. So they managed to get me in there and I could pay my like bond and deposit and all that stuff like late. And then I end up getting a job working on a cruise liner, doing all this cool shit. And I was like a tourist in my own city, right?
That's wild.
Yeah, but this was like the start of my like growth. So what I would do, I met all these like-minded people from all over the world. And I was like I said, a tourist in my own country. And I just like, weirdly enough, in that moment, this was the start of my modeling career. I found myself and I started to research like how to get out of your comfort zone. And one of the things that I did, which is awesome, and I think everyone should do this, is go to like, if you're familiar with Bondi, there's like a pavilion or like a boardwalk that goes all along the beach. If you go along that boardwalk, there's so many people there and they're constantly looking at you and they're all beautiful because it's Bondi. And I was like, oh shit, even being in the modeling, you're constantly insecure about it. Everyone's got insecurities.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh God, everyone's looking at me if I do this. And what I was about to do, and I researched this, is lie down in the middle of a busy like boardwalk where people are walking by and just plank there, like lie and just look up at the sky in the middle and sit there for 10 minutes and let people walk past you and look at you and face the judgment and the fear and grow from that experience. And when I did that, I constantly would do little things like this and I would force myself to be like this guy who would just do stupid shit like that because I wanted to grow.
If you ask yourself, why do you think people don't achieve XYZ by 30, do you think it's because they're not willing to go through the discomfort to truly do what they want to do? Meaning, you know how they say that, you know, nothing easy was ever worth doing, or what the opposite
of
that,
you know? Yeah, I get it,
And it's weird that you're saying all this because literally on my computer right now, I'm doing a session about discomfort and confidence.
Mm-hmm.
And 99.9% of the time when people ask me, what can I do to build my confidence? I say, go out there and screw something up.
Yeah. Yes.
Go out there and fall on your face. Do something that you have no idea what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Seek discomfort.
And when you go through that, that's when you start building confidence. And from a neural point of view, we mm-hmm. know that being in the flow state is not mm-hmm. going to build confidence. It's not yep. going to make your brain more plastic.
Yep.
It's when you actually do things that have errors in it that it creates feedback to your yep. brain. Do you know what I mean? Like, do you think that's why people don't achieve what they want to achieve? Because they're like, shouldn't it be easy?
Yeah, I think there's no right way to go about life. Like, yeah. some entrepreneurial people have a different mindset to someone. Because I am envious of people who have like the stability of like a regular, quote unquote, regular life. Because like, say a mate of mine who's a doctor who has like a steady income, will pay off his mortgage in X amount of years. And it's like, everything's really nice and everything's really like great. Like obviously really nice on the surface, everyone has problems. Not yeah. saying a blanket statement, but it's like, yeah, I'm envious of that stuff. But if you want to grow as a person, you definitely have to go through and force yourself to be in situations that you don't want to be in. Because yeah. there's no way to grow if you're, like we said, if you're not changing anything, there's cause and effect. Every cause has an effect. So if you don't change anything, then nothing is going to change in your life. Nothing's going to progress. Nothing's going to like grow.
You're speaking my language. One of my favorite quotes is yeah. by a psychiatrist who survived the Holocaust, and he wrote mm-hmm. a book called A Man's Search for Meaning.
Yeah.
And the quote is essentially, between the stimulus and the response, there's a space, and in the space lies your freedom to make a choice. Mm-hmm. And in those choices lies your freedom to grow,
yep.
essentially. I mean, what he went through and what, you know, I think it's 8 million Jews mm-hmm. that essentially were killed, what mm-hmm. they went through is atrocious. Mm-hmm. And they were basically, what he was saying, through this Holocaust, everyone in there had to make a choice how they reacted to this uncontrolled stimuli that was mm-hmm. affecting them. And it sounds to me that even though your life has thrown you lemons in regards to being kicked back, you know, in New York, mm-hmm. and I'm sure you have a thousand other stories, yeah, you made a choice to look at things differently. So if you could suggest something for someone to consider if they're in the bowels of discomfort, when perhaps maybe they're in a negative relationship, if they're trying to figure out, should I stay in this job? Should I do a new career? And they're, you know, when mm-hmm. you're in that sick kind of quagmire of discomfort, yeah. what would you suggest to them to think, do, say, action?
Well, the first thing that I would say is kind of super basic, but it's like, stick it out. You're saying if you're in the discomfort, yeah, like stick it out, because like only constant is change.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is the example I always give. If I'm dedicating, let's say I live till like 90 or 100, then I dedicate the next 70 years of my life to art.
Yeah.
And it's inherently a discomfort. It's a very like shitty occupation if you want to make a lot of money, yeah. you know. So
well, it's shitty when you're still alive. After you die, yeah, you're going to be so good. Rich.
Yeah, yeah. Then go by all means. No, but like if you're dedicating that amount of time, you are bound to have incredible moments. You're also bound to have completely shit moments where you're down in the dumps. But like the good moments are definitely going to come. So if you stick something out that you love, but it's discomfort and you know it's going to give you growth in the future, stick it out. More than likely in time, there'll be something, a epiphany moment or something will happen where that growth will tick over.
Mm-hmm. But how do you know whether you should stick it out or you should make the uncomfortable decision to leave? Like let's use a yucky job mm-hmm. where you're just sort of 9 to 5 slugging it out. Well, you're not really filling your purpose.
Yeah.
So you're paying the mortgage. Mm-hmm. You know, you have 2 kids. Mm-hmm. You need that security of the money.
Well, I think inherently people, they say they won't, but if you really like push them, they know what they want.
Yeah.
Everyone knows what they want. Sometimes it's really scary to want something because with the insecurities of life and blah, 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 a lot of people are self-critical and they're like, I don't deserve good things. Da, da, da. It's like, well, maybe change that mindset and say like, well, fuck it. I'm actually like a decent person. I'm kind. I'm nice. I'm talented in X, Y, Z. Yeah. Like I do deserve good things, and establish that want And like you said to me, is like that what the fuck moment,
yeah,
which everyone does have. And you challenged me to think about that. And like that has actually changed my course as well.
Mm.
It, like have that what the fuck moment and just go towards it as best as you can. Because I always say this as well. So say with New York, I had that, the mindset, it's like, I'm going to make New York happen. I had no clue how I was going to make it happen.
Mm.
But people would call it law of attraction, manifesting. I think it's... I don't think there's a, like a magical quality to that. I think it's a very like logical, sound thing. And it can be kind of, if you want, we're like computers, right? We see the screen,
yeah,
but there's obviously a computer in the backdrop doing all the technical stuff and it's figuring it all out. That's what the human brain is like, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the human brain is always figuring things out in the background. If you have a goal and or a want or a what the fuck moment, you're going to, if that's what you really, really want and that's what you preach every single day and you say it to this, like what I'll do every night is I'll go to the stars and I'll just talk to the stars like, this is what we're going to do, da, 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 da. And I amp myself up, reset the next day. If you are preaching that to yourself every single day, your brain is smart enough. In the background, it'll make all the little micro decisions to get to that want or the what the fuck moment or your goal. It will, like, there's no way that your brain, because your brain doesn't know anything else. If you feed it all this like truth,
yeah,
it knows nothing else. And it's gonna. So say you're walking down the street, you bump into someone, and you're like, oh, that person looks like they could. You're not actively like thinking about this, but your brain is doing it in the background, and it's hardwired to be like, oh yeah, this is like this person might actually have some kind of positive benefit for my goal, and it will figure it out. But maybe I'll talk to this person. And it's weird how these like serendipitous moments happen and you like sit down with someone and you're like, wow, this is actually exactly what I needed to hear at the exact time. There's nothing magical about it. It's just that you're preaching to yourself what you want and you're going after it as best as you can and things just happen and there's no magic to it.
Mm.
I assume you're going to have to tell me because I'm not a scientist and I can't talk for that or like I'm not in the medical field at all. But that's my experience and that's what I feel happens.
Yeah. So visualization, a lot of people use, it sounds really new age and woo-woo and so forth. But the brain, there's a part of the brain called the reticular activating system, which really works with images. So, you know, when you have mood boards and inspiration boards and so forth, how essentially your brain works, I'll give you an example. Like, let's say you want to buy a red Audi or a red Toyota because that's easier to say.
Yeah, yeah.
So you have this, you know, new red Toyota that you want to buy. So you have this picture in your mind. Then you start driving around and all of a sudden you're noticing all these damn red Toyotas. What your brain is doing, it seems like, oh my God, this must be a sign, right? That's how you sort of think. But your brain is actually, because it has that image in its mind, it's essentially filtering out all the other information that is not useful to obtaining that goal.
Yeah.
So when it comes to essentially, I want to achieve X by 30, visualization is highly, highly beneficial in that way when you want to achieve anything.
Mm-hmm.
So if one of my friends and I always say everything is figure outable. If you can have that, wow, that floats my boat. That's what I want. That's what I want to truly achieve by 30. Not someone else, not your mom, your dad, your best friend, your dog or postman. That's really important. Because if you don't have this incessant need to achieve something, if you don't have incentive, you're never going to achieve it.
And not everyone has that. And that's like totally fine. So anyone who's listening who doesn't have that like incessant need or want to do something, because your want doesn't have to be something crazy. When we talk about doing something amazing by 30, that's all subjective. Something amazing for someone could be like, I wish I could get my dream job at a, you know, a very like, suitable, nice, like law firm or something, or like a maybe even a desk job at some kind of corporation, whatever it happens to be. It doesn't have to be crazy. You could just be like, hey, by 30, I hope to have like faced a lot of my insecurities and be like happy within myself.
That's it.
Like baby steps. For people who are like us, I guess, who have that entrepreneurial spirit and maybe our own biggest, like, what's the word I'm looking for?
Competitor in a way. I'm my worst competitor, but I love it.
Yeah, as long as you can embrace that as like a good thing, it all comes down to embracing who you are and being okay with that person. If you're a shy, introverted person, blah, blah, be that person to the best of your ability and shout that to the world. Just don't falter on that, because it comes back to, sorry to segue out of this, but like to it comes back to art with me and what I'm trying to achieve with this, and it kind of relates back, is that if as an artist you want to create an art style, right? Mm. That's kind of what I was against an art style for my whole life, because I was like, I just want to do whatever the fuck comes to my mind.
Yeah.
But eventually you want to come up with like your own brand and your own unique thing. But you're, so you can make like a stamp on this world and mm-hmm. kind of leave a legacy. So what I try to do, and like you said about the childlike mind, is like when I have a dream, one of my dreams was this ambiguous figure crouching down and sitting on a wooden toy car. Made no sense at all, but I was like, fuck it, I'm gonna sketch this. I'm not gonna be judgmental of this idea. It sounds so stupid, right? It sounds so stupid. It has no meaning essentially, but it probably has a deeper meaning. And I'll sketch it out, and then I'll iterate on the design until it becomes a full-fledged art piece. And along that journey, I'm figuring out what that story is. And because I wasn't judgmental of the idea, that idea that I've put out into the world it's unequivocally me, and therefore it's unique.
Mm-hmm. This is like ping, 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 ping. I always say to someone, I used to work in weight loss and primarily women would always say, I'll like myself when I lose weight.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, it doesn't really work that way. You can't judge yourself and then become the person that you want to be.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't my saying, but the curious paradox is that when you accept yourself just as you are, then you can change.
Mm-hmm.
That's the paradox of it. So you can't judge yourself on what you want to do, mm-hmm. but also expect that you're going to achieve something.
Yeah.
You know, you can't be your own worst critic, as in from a negative perspective.
Yeah,
there's a difference between, come on, let's push ourselves. You can do better than this. Mm-hmm. You can get more out of this, mm-hmm. versus you're never going to achieve something. This is shit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's two different perspectives of it. So it sounds to me that you just said, this is me.
Yeah, you have to be you. Like if you're not you, you're trying to. This is, I think there's a quote somewhere, but it's like, if you're not you, all you're trying to do is impress other people who don't give a shit about you. They just care about themselves. So if you're trying to impress people that don't care about you, like, what are you doing it for? You're doing it for them. And like, what kind of life is that?
It's so easy to fall into that trap, though, especially if you have a success mindset, would mm-hmm. you not say? For example, I give talks, mm-hmm. and because I have an academic background, mm-hmm. when I walk up on stage, everyone's like, okay, this is going to be academic references and this and that, and then I start telling stories. Mm. And one of my favorite analogies is farts, because I just
think everyone loves
they're
farts.
Hilarious.
Yeah.
And it's a great metaphor for letting out thoughts.
Yeah.
It's relieving, et cetera, et cetera. So, there's always this sort of preconceived idea, notion of academics. Academics must act this way in this. Uh-huh. I kind of get it, because then you're like, oh, I have to be that if I want to be successful, I want to be like Brené Brown or something like that. But mm-hmm. then are you really successful if you're not who you actually are?
Yeah, there's no, I feel like you can replicate success of other people, but you don't have to.
Yeah.
You can create your own version of success. And to be honest, the real change makers, they're not they will take an archetype of someone's personality or someone's career or whatever, and they'll just make a slight iteration on that and then and go in their own direction. But they did that well, but I think I could do it better. And maybe that's the mindset, where it's like, I should change, I could do it better. And that also comes back from the self-confidence. If you don't have the self-confidence, and you almost have to break it down to the individual level and just your day-to-day life. You have to love yourself in order to make those big decisions and those really pivotal decisions in your life.
Especially because a lot of your decisions are not going to work out. So if you don't like yourself and everything's not going well, you're not going to get too far too fast.
No, you're not. Definitely not.
So it sounds to me from, everything that you've achieved, you've really been able to achieve it by almost pulling a George Costanza, doing the opposite. I don't know if you remember
episode. Yeah, I've watched every episode. Yeah.
I'm just going to do the opposite. And you got the girl, you got the job, et cetera, et cetera. So you were able to achieve all this. Mm-hmm. It almost sounds too good to be true. It almost sounds to me that you have this kind of impenetrable, I can never say that, this mindset where it's just you're you're strong, you have a growth mindset.
No, that's the problem. People, if you were to say like to someone, oh, you're so strong, that's actually like invalidated, because they say they're not strong.
Mm.
It's invalidating who they are and what they're feeling.
Mm.
So it's like, no, people who look strong on the outside, actually everyone faces their demons, everyone goes through things. Mm-hmm. The idea is to be able to comfortably sit in pain.
Mm.
If you can comfortably sit in pain, then you can imagine what the reverse is.
So in that sense, I'm sort of, if you feel me scratching on the surface, that's why. Because essentially from the outside,
uh-huh.
you know, this is, I see this. Mm-hmm. And then you're saying I'm sitting in pain. I want to know what that pain feels like for you. And not the, I don't want you to put a bow around it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want you to say this is what I'm going through. I'm utilizing this.
Mm-hmm.
How does it feel? Like, do you ever have dark moments?
Hell yeah. Everyone has dark moments for sure. Like in retrospect, you relish those moments, but how does it feel? My first like pain that I can remember is like going through anxiety, which I don't know where it stemmed from, but no one really does unless you sort it out, like whatever. And you could go down in the rabbit hole. There's probably lots of different things.
Let's go down the rabbit hole.
Yeah, for sure. So like I had this, my anxiety was the fear of, I was a massive hypochondriac growing up. So constantly worried about, similar to the thing of counting the stairs, being like, oh my God, I have 10, this was when I was like a toddler. I would just like count the stairs. I would analyze everything around me. And then I would make my decision accordingly. So obviously I had an anxious mind. You can just tell by that scenario. My fear went from hypochondria all the way to I developed like a sinus condition, which I had like two operations on. And I almost had like a vertigo kind of thing going on. And I would drive. And my thing was, if I was at a red light, I was like shit scared of passing out. But when I was driving, I was fine. Weird. I don't know what it was, but it was that trigger. And I went through a few red lights because I was like, fuck, I need to get home. Like, I was like, shit, I can't, like, I'm about to pass out. That's way worse than, like, me not moving.
Yeah.
So I'd be like, fuck. I had a very anxious mindset. And my anxiety got to the point where it was like, holy shit, like, I'm scared of death. Like, I was like, death is like nothingness forever. And I was like, holy shit. Like, it would freak me out so much.
And you've sort of changed color even when you're talking about this. Yeah. That's a wild thing.
Yeah, it would freak me out so much. And what I end up doing, I am lucky, and I don't know why because not everyone has this, but I think I'm blessed with like a logical mindset from my dad. And then like the real happy-go-lucky childlike mentality from my mom. Not that my mom's a child, but like she just has like a zest and lust for life. And dad has a very logical business, strong-willed like mindset. And luckily I can tap into that. And I realized I was having these thoughts and, you know, anxiety and depression. I think I was teetering on depression.
Okay.
It was like got to the point, and this was years ago when I was like early 20s.
Mm.
And I was like, oh my, like, holy crap. I remember talking to my sister. I was like, but there's like, it's nothingness forever. Like, and I was so scared of this one thing. Anyway, what I ended up getting into was like meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And luckily I realized that I was having an anxious mind because when I had this sinus stuff, it kind of, there's this thing called like brain fog. It's like, I don't think it's a medical, maybe it's a medical term now, but like about the time no one really knew. It was kind of on the forums and stuff. People would talk about brain fog. It's like disassociation essentially from yourself. Sometimes I'm like even right now, I'm kind of here, but not here. Like I'm, you know, it's constantly, like I said before, trying to fight to be present.
Yes.
And that fight is what, can kind of cause anxiety sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
It's always fighting the pain is causing anxiety. So luckily I was able to have that logical mindset, even amidst the like brain fog and everything and the anxiety, to be like, shit, this is not good. The anxiety is doing me no favors. I need to change it. Started to research. I've always done my own research and tried to figure out my problems. I always am of the predisposition to be like, there is a solution to every problem.
Mm.
To some degree, obviously. I would research and I found meditation through the Headspace app. And I downloaded it. It was like, shit, this is bloody expensive. It was like $100 per year. At that time, I was like, no. I mean, even now, it's pretty expensive. So
yeah.
I ended up like biting the bullet doing it. And I had to do those, like I said, bicep curls for the brain. So every time my mind would go away from the present moment, I'd have to bring it back. What that inherently does, yeah, it's great to be present and everything, but what meditation does is, because it's such an insular, self-reflecting practice, you end up facing your fears. And you realize that, like, sitting in the pain of being like, okay, I'm so scared of death and, like, dying because of the hypochondria and everything. I'm so scared of that. Like, it's like I was fighting that thought. I'm like, kept pushing it away. And it was only until I brought it in and, like, it was able to, like, feel that it's okay to have these thoughts and just, like, sit in that scary thought for a while and just be there. You don't have to do much. You don't have to do anything. If you do anything, that's too much. Just sit in the pain and those, like, scary thoughts and just see what happens. And, like, your mind starts to figure it out itself. Because, like I said, we're smarter than we think.
So it sounds to me like you saw your thoughts rather than being your thoughts.
Yeah, I just embraced them.
So what about if you know, the second bit is, what's your secret? What do you want to share with us today that maybe makes you, it doesn't have to be a secret with a beginning and an end, or just something that perhaps you haven't shared with anyone before?
I don't know, because I'm such an open book that, like, I made it my life. There was a decision, maybe this is the secret, like, there was a time when I was younger where I made the decision to, whatever was on my mind at any given moment, and maybe it was due to this anxiety, to tell exact, like, to speak what exactly is on my mind at any given time to anyone. And, like, even the darkest thoughts, speak it out. If you hold it in, that's what fucks you. Like,
it's like farts.
Yeah, exactly. And I was going to choose that question, the, like, nervous wind, the one at the secret. Yeah, that was the one I was like, oh, that's me, or the poo one. Like, I don't know, either one.
Anyways, back to this. So how old were you when you decided, I'm just going to let everything out?
It must have been early 20s, because I can't pinpoint when it was. I guess because, like, as a guy, inherently, you just, like, hold everything in, right? And that's, like, such a cliche. Like, guys can't speak about mental health.
Yeah.
But it's like, and I can't even give you the reason why I came to the decision. It was like, you go through some shit and then sometimes you just have to make the decision to, like, make yourself better or to stay in the shit situation. Like, some situations are unavoidable. Like, you have to, like, just carry the pain with you for your life. But there's always, like, things you can do to make your situation a little bit lighter or a bit easier to manage. And there was just a decision on my part where I was like, yeah, I just want to, like, I don't want this to control me. And if I'm holding in all these thoughts, maybe it was through meditation where I'm just like, just speak your mind. And I wanted to become this person, like, almost the, is the word antithesis?
Yeah.
Is that the opposite?
Antithesis,
Yeah. Of the person I was as a child, because that person, I didn't like that person. Like, I was born as that person, but I didn't want to be that person. I wanted to be that, like, crazy, fun person who was probably trapped inside of the, like, cocoon, and I wanted to, like, come out and spread its wings and become the butterfly and just, like, fly away.
Your alter ego.
Yeah. I wanted to become my alter ego. And, like, I think, I don't know why I had that ingrained in me, and maybe it's a genetic predisposition to do that. But if you're listening right now, you don't have to be genetically predisposed to, like, have that. You're listening to it right now. You can make the decision to go in that direction. Mm-hmm. And it's like, speak your truth. Be your, like, unequivocally yourself to everyone, and, like, just fuck it. Like, just do whatever you got to do.
Has that ever come back and hit you in the face?
Not if you're a decent person. If you're a shit person, it's like, they say with money, right? If you get X amount of money, it shows who you truly are as a person. It shows your true colors. If you're, same with these things. If you're speaking your truth and you're a decent person, you can be, like, rest assured, like me right now. I'm quietly confident that, like, I'm not going to say anything insane or something that will, like,
hurt someone,
jeopardize my character or someone else's character.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I'm a decent person. And it's like, so maybe that's another prerequisite. Just be decent, be a good person, and like care for, oh my God, I can go down another segue, but it's like, people have lost the ability to be kind and compassionate. It's such a simple thing, but just to be a nice fucking person, like, it's so simple. That's the core and that's the foundation of everyone's being. Yeah. And then you build up on that.
Has anyone not been kind to you in your life?
Not to the degree where I care too much. Like, everyone when they're younger has like the little bully kind of situation at school or what. Oh yeah, actually, hell yeah. When I was younger, because I've got such an ADD personality, not sure if I do, but like, I'm self-diagnosed, whatever. Mm-hmm. I talk a lot, as you can already know. People would always call me ADD Mace. So ADD Mace. And I was like playing, because I'd always like get really angry at Foursquare. You know that game where
yeah,
it's
like, dunce. I kicked ass at that.
Yeah, I was like, I felt like I was good, but if I was so competitive, maybe you were the same. Totally. If you got out, I would freak out. And people would like shout at me, ADD Mace, and I'm like, well, fuck. Like, and then I would cry. And I remember that, like, that was like, yeah.
So, you know, model, good looking guy, tall, this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So you, I think this is changing, but I think oftentimes we associate beautiful people with this perfect life. You've never been bullied. You're at the top of the crowd. Like, you're the cool person.
Yeah.
But that doesn't sound to me the case. So
I think everyone has their demons for sure. But it's being able to embrace those demons and actually, this is the thing. Your biggest insecurities are usually other people's like favorite things about you. So me, like, I have like laugh lines and I'm like, I fucking hate these laugh lines. I'm 31, like, it's expected, right?
Yeah.
But it's like people love that about me and it's my biggest insecurity. So one day you're just going to be like, well, shit, I got to get rid of my ego. It's not about me anymore. If people say it, it's the truth. If they say like, hey, I fucking love your laugh lines, then they love your laugh lines. Yeah. Don't worry about it, you know? Like, you're going to worry about it. So, but don't worry about it.
So you were this, like, outgoing, loud kind of kid that expressed your emotions.
I think I was trying to find myself, and that's where the quote-unquote ADD, like, caught, like, bullying would come from. And it would be like, I was trying to find myself and fighting like who I was. And it's like, oh, being the ADD guy isn't cool. It's not like respectable. And I was like, then come the tears, right? When you're a kid.
Mm-hmm.
But now coming full circle to where I am now, that's my best quality.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Is I think oftentimes we fight for so long against the things that are perceived to be bad qualities about us.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden we're like, oh, this is what makes us who we are. I used to get teased because I had monobrow. I had this, like, I have my grandpa's eyebrows.
You can't tell now.
No, that's many, many dollars spent on electrolysis. But, yeah, like, I would have the monobrow. Mm-hmm. And I would – back then we didn't have social media, so I didn't know. You pluck them. So I used to shave in between my eyebrows. And
it grows back thicker?
No, well, it didn't do that, but I got a razor rash.
Oh, wow.
So then I had this razor rash in between my eyebrows, and then I would have to put cover up on it. So it was like this orange pink kind of like spot in between my eyebrows. And then, of course, European background, you start growing the mustache and this and that. So back then, again, you go to the drugstore, you get bleach. And so I put bleach on my top upper lip and then it bleached my skin.
Oh, my God.
So then I had like a pink in between my eyebrows and a white upper lip.
Yeah.
And these big lips. And all that, you scroll through social media nowadays, it's big eyebrows, big lips, big hair. I'm like, you see, suckers?
Do you know what? Yeah, it comes full circle.
It comes full circle.
But do you know what? This is the reason, like, why this is so easy to chat to you right now is because I really resonate and I love talking to people who have gone through pain. You can't control how much pain you go through in life, but usually people that I resonate with have gone through some shitty things. And I think scars are beautiful.
Me too.
Like, yeah, like having like, but the problem, the person with the scar will be so, they'll have almost like a defeatist attitude of like, fuck this, I got this problem. But that it's okay to have scars. It's beautiful to have scars because that makes you you. There's no light without the dark. You need to have the darkness to be able to even see the light.
Yep.
So it's like it's life is all about balance, and you can't just have all positive moments and all like, no. If you're striving for that, that's not what life is about. Life is about both and embracing both and realizing that both will and they will happen.
Yep. Absolutely.
Shit times and good times will happen. There's no two ways about it. And as long as if you stop fighting it, just like you were fighting your eyebrows, like that's where the problem comes, because then you got the rash and then you got the more comments and you're like, why is this situation getting worse?
Yeah.
Because you're fighting the shit situation. Embrace it, be your true self, and that's where the magic lies, I guess.
Absolutely. This too shall pass.
Yeah, you exactly. Know,
the bad stuff will pass just like the good stuff
but
will
I do
pass.
I do want to say bad things, they may seem to pass, but some things just won't go away. Some people will go through some shit and it's fucking shit for the rest of their life.
Mm.
And that's okay.
But is that a choice?
No, it's not, because it's like, I think if people who have shit things will carry it for the rest of their lives, but it's okay to have things, like, because some things are unavoidable, like things to do with like grief or like pain, that is like something that you can never avoid those things. And it's like, it will stay with you forever, right? Mm-hmm. And that's okay. It's fine to be in a shitty spot and retain it. But like to carry it and move forward in pain, that's where the magic lies. You never say like, I think this shall pass. It seems to pass, right? But it's still always there. And the beauty about life is that we can carry pain and we can move forward with pain and in pain.
I think for me, I take a different perspective of pain, like, because for me, and you're sort of making me think, do I like pain? Like, how can I look at pain? Because pain to me is, I think of the nervous system. I think of the nervous system saying, there's something wrong. There's an error that needs to be fixed.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of, if you think about it from a nervous system or a neuroplasticity point of view. So when I think about the pain of my past, I don't feel that pain anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I can empathize with people who are going through similar pain.
I think it manifests itself. I think, no, not the word, it metamorphosizes itself to become, it changes.
It changes into a lesson.
Yeah, but I think it still can have moments where it will surface.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Yeah, and that therefore it is still there.
Gotcha.
It's just not like you're dealing with it and the perception of it changes.
Yes.
Yeah, but it doesn't go away. Some things just won't go away. And that's where you have to be okay with being in a shitty position. And people are going through really fucking shit situations. Like, they don't want to hear that everything's going to pass. That's the fucking worst thing you can say to these people, is like, you have to sit with them in the pain and be like, it's okay to feel shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, feel that fucking pain. Feel it. Because, like, you don't want to be like, hey, you're so strong. Oh, fuck, I'm not strong. I'm actually fucking struggling right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's where you have to be. That's where pain is like such a thing. Yes, the perception of it does change.
Mm.
But that comes through years of therapy, years of self-love and self-work. And if you're not willing to do that, then maybe it will stay at the level where it is, you know?
And that's, I think, where I was getting to, in the sense that if you make a choice to let that pain, I guess, dictate you or drive your bus around, that's one thing. But you can have the bus, you can have the pain sitting on your bus, but you can be driving that bus.
Yeah.
And there's a different way of, essentially, you can either control the pain or the pain
I don't
control
think,
you.
But I don't think it's like a choice. Like the word choice is really like harsh in a way that's like, you don't choose to be in pain. Like that would, you don't choose to be in pain, but I guess you can choose to do things to lighten your load.
Yes.
So let's say you've got like a pain and it's X, and then you have Y and Z, which are also pains. X will stay there.
Yeah.
That's the pain that will stay with you for life, and that's fucked up. But you also have, people don't just have one problem. They have lots of little micro problems.
Yeah.
If you can somehow eradicate the problems that are controllable, or something that you can actually change, because some things aren't, you can't change. If you can change the things that can be changed, then you've got, let's say you've got two rocks here. I've got two fists out and two fists. This is the one on the left that cannot be changed. This is the one that can be changed. This fucking sucks. This situation that I'm looking at right now, my two fists, that sucks. Yep. Okay. I fix the one on the right. that goes away. Yeah, this one on the left is still there, but it's definitely lighter.
Mm. So control the controllables.
Yeah,
control exactly. What you're able to do. So getting back to Viktor Frankl, mm-hmm. I mean, he went through the Holocaust. He saw atrocities that no one should ever essentially go through. Mm-hmm. He wrote a book, not on the tortures that happened, but how people reacted to the situation at hand. Some people chose a learned helplessness kind of attitude where I can't do anything about mm-hmm. my situation. They perish very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Other people chose to go into their brain and use their processing space to remember mm-hmm. birthdays with their kids or the first kiss with their wife or husband.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where it's like this whole perception, I think
it's the what you're saying is so true, and it's you can make decisions to make yourself better, but you can't persecute someone for struggling with making that decision. So someone who's struggling to make a decision to better their life, sometimes you just have to realize that getting through one day is the biggest success that they could ever fucking have.
Yes.
And it's like getting through one day is... it's so subjective to the person. And some people, to get through or to move with pain, some people are very resilient. And maybe it's a, like we said, genetic predisposition.
Mm.
And you're resilient and you'll get over it sooner than someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And the person who isn't so resilient and maybe they have a lot of like, you know, self-hate or whatever it is, like mm-hmm. some insecurities and da-da-da-da-da, or sometimes the pain is just unimaginable and for very good reason, maybe that will take them their whole lifetime. And that's mm-hmm. okay. Either scenario is okay.
Yeah.
And that's what this is all about and where we've gotten to in this chat is like being okay with everything that comes into your life and just know that that is life. And there's some people, you look at them and they're blessed with what seems to be the most beautiful, amazing life. And some people are fucking get shit and they get the lemons. And they don't know how to turn it into lemonade. And that's fine as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why we're doing this chat, because making it okay to speak out about your pain and to be like, embrace it and talk about it. Don't hold back.
If
you have someone that's going to fucking listen, grab that with both arms and just offload.
Yeah.
You know, and if you don't have that person, go see someone else.
Yep.
You know,
or write it down.
Yeah, or write it down. Writing your pain is the best thing, and that's something I've discovered is mm-hmm. amazing. Weird thing, I can't actually paint when I'm in pain. I can, but I struggle to start the process. But writing about it is like really good, and there's always creative outlets which can kind of help you get through some shitty situations. But like, because of my art is so, I think I want to come from a positive mindset where it's like, I inherently think that a brushstroke when you're depressed looks different to a brushstroke when you're joyous.
It's all perception.
Yeah.
It's like when I give a talk, if I've slept well and had something good happen to me, mm-hmm. my perception of the exact same talk.
But I even think other people can feel it.
I believe that there's relational painting, energetics. Yeah.
Yeah. If I did a painting and it was the most beautiful painting and it had such joyful like energy put into it, and then I painted white over the top and completely was a blank canvas, I actually do believe people will feel the joy that comes out of that white canvas. And for some reason, it will be like, I don't know. That's what I believe. It has no basis for it, but I just feel like the energy that you put into something is reciprocated or it's felt. And it's what I bring into my art practice. So I think that's why I can't paint when I'm like depressed, but I would love to, thinking about how my life, I would love to try when I'm in a shitty position to force myself to paint when I'm depressed, because why not see what the other side of the coin looks like?
There we go. That's a good challenge.
Yeah.
Because essentially what you're saying is embrace whatever you're going through.
Mm-hmm.
So why, you know, for the people that are going through a rough time right now, why don't you embrace that? Get that out on a piece of paper, get it out with your best friend.
I think everyone has their thing, whether it be art, music, not even a creative pursuit. Maybe you love exercise. Maybe you love do whatever it is you love and channel the pain through that.
Yes.
And then you don't need to worry about the end product. Just do it and be okay with the result, because usually the result of that is something good, or at least a little bit better than your situation.
Absolutely. I have a Jewish background, and there's a word in Yiddish called kvetch.
Mm-hmm.
Kvetch is like to complain, and it's really reserved for older Jewish people. It's like,
even like if it's great old Greeks.
If it's like a sunny day, it's too hot. If it's raining, it's too wet.
That's what keeps you living long, though, the complaining.
The kvetch. And so whenever I'm having a bad day, the first thing I do is to my partner, I say, I just need to kvetch. I don't need solutions, don't need anything. Or with Gab, when I come in here, we both deal with stomach problems and so forth. And I just need to get it out. I just need to vent.
Yeah.
And then I'm good.
Sometimes the best thing you can have is, say you have like Gab, is like someone who can sit in your pain and just listen.
Yeah.
And then you can just vent and get it all out there. Because like I said, it goes full circle again. We are smart enough. And when we're venting and just like someone, the human connection is amazing.
I have goosebumps just thinking about it.
Yeah. Being able to be here and to like vent things. I'm like, there's little micro decisions going in my brain. I'm figuring out my own shit as we speak.
Yeah.
Same as when you vent your pain, like you end up figuring it out yourself because we're like smart enough. And you don't need to do anything.
Mm.
You just need to have those people around you that actually give a shit about you.
That's it.
Yeah.
So maybe one of the exercises from today is cut out the toxic people and fart on the people that really love you.
Yeah. Just don't hold in those farts.
What a great way to end on this incredible. I'm sure we could just keep on talking.
Yeah,
go
we'll
down.
Do another one. Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do part two coming up soon. But thank you so much for your honesty and your stories and just even your energy
has brought
so much to even the dogs are relaxed because of this beautiful energy.
I don't know how they're relaxed with my ADD vibes, but
hey,
we know that's a good thing now. So
that's it.
That's why we're even calming little chihuahuas. So
thanks, my dear. That was awesome.
No worries.
All right.
See ya.